Hey, welcome everybody to the Saturday meditation class. I'm not sure, I think Ajahn had to go somewhere today, so that's why I'm here in her place, basically. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about a particular paragraph in a particular place in the suttas. This is part of the gradual training. And this paragraph is something which recurs many times in the suttas because it's part of the gradual training. And I think it's quite interesting to actually note this little paragraph because it says quite a bit about the purpose of meditation and how to actually, one of the most important aspects of meditation. As I said, it's found in the gradual training. And as you might know, the gradual training is one of the most important aspects, if you like, of the Dhamma that we find in the suttas. You find the gradual training again and again and again in so many different places. You find it in the Digha Nikaya, the long discourse of the Buddha, about 12 times, I think. You find it in the Majjhima Nikaya many, many times. So it's an extremely important way of actually teaching and showing the entire path of practice, if you like, from the very beginning to the very end. From starting off with virtue to becoming an arahat, it shows the entire path as it's laid out. And this gradual training begins, of course, with virtue, like we would normally expect. So it starts off explaining what virtue is all about, how to be moral, how to live a good life. And then it goes on to what is known as sense restraint, holding back the senses, making sure that you don't allow very unwholesome things to rise in the mind. And then after the sense restraint, there's a section usually called knowing measure in food. In other words, not eating too much, so you don't get too slothful. You don't give rise to unwholesome states because of eating too much. And after that comes a section that I was thinking about, talk a little bit about today. And this section is called wakefulness, is a short phrase, or the short term for this particular section. And what this section says, and remember that this is mostly meant for monastics, it's mostly meant for monks and nuns, but it's obviously also applicable for lay people to a large extent. But what this section says is that during the day, the person walks up and down and sits and purifies the mind of unwholesome states, of unwholesome qualities. And then it says the same thing for during the night. During the night, the same person does exactly the same thing. Sits, walks up and down, and purifies the mind of unwholesome states. And there's only one small section in there, and that is the middle quarter of the night, when you actually lie down, and you have a sleep and you rest. Apart from that, you keep walking up and down, you keep sitting to purify the mind of unwholesome states. Now, the reason I find this section quite interesting is that, first of all, you will recognize that straight away that this is about meditation practice, because it talks about walking up and down and sitting. That's precisely what we today would talk about as meditation practice. But the interesting thing here is that how this meditation is actually described here is described as purifying the mind of unwholesome states. That is how it is described. And that is, I find that quite fascinating, because very often we talk about meditation practice as being maybe breath meditation or loving kindness meditation. We talk a lot about the object, but what is actually meditation doing? What should it be doing to us? It should purify the mind, and that is the purpose of meditation practice. No matter what object we use, no matter what we do. And here it is, in one of the most important of all the structures that you find in the suttas, this gradual training. It's written there black on white in the modern printed editions. It's about the purification of the mind. So then to understand a little bit more about what this purification of mind means, and how it so to speak starts off, and how it works. One very good place to look, of course, is often the Satipatthana Sutta. Satipatthana Sutta, the four focuses of mindfulness, or the four foundations of mindfulness, if you like, is also basically, is all, of course also about meditation practice. And you will find that if you read the suttas in quite widely, you will see that Satipatthana practice always leads on to samadhi. It's the foundation for samadhi practice, the foundation for the jhanas, when you read the suttas broadly. Actually, before I move on to Satipatthana, I would also like to say that the gradual training then after this wakefulness thing, it continues. And the next step after that is jhanas. So the jhana meditation comes after that. So the purification of the mind by walking up and down and sitting, and then comes the jhanas after that. So just to summarize just the gradual training briefly, if you start off with the more coarser kind of purification, purifying the core states of mind by just ordinary virtue, then you have the sense restraint to abandon some of the coarser aspects of the mental defilements. And then you have this meditation practice, which can be looked upon as Satipatthana practice, the focus of mindfulness. And then you come to jhana. So it's a gradual increase in purification, step by step by step, until the mind becomes completely purified in the samadhi. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, there is one section which is called the contemplation of the five hindrances. And of course, the five hindrances are the archetype of the defilements of the mind. So if you're going to purify the mind of anything, it is first and foremost the five hindrances that you're purifying from the mind. And the way this is explained in this Satipatthana Sutta, the focuses of mindfulness, is that it says, first of all, starting off with each of these hindrances, starting off with sensual desire, the first thing is to understand there is desire, sensual desire present in me. I have sensual desire internally. This, of course, is the very beginning. We have to actually be able to read our own minds and understand the content of that mind. Because only then can you take the appropriate action. Only then can you understand what is going on and what is not going on and do something about it. And you may think that that sounds fairly straightforward. And of course, it is quite straightforward when the defilements are really gross and really strong and really powerful. It's very easy then to understand that something is wrong and to see what it actually is, which is wrong. But things like sensual desire can also be very refined. It can come in all kinds of forms and shapes. So the point here is actually to contemplate sometimes, look into your mind and come to understand this hindrance of sensual desire in a much broader way than just the courses of its manifestations. But also understand it when there's only a very slight amount of sensual desire there, only very, very minor things. So the point here is to actually come to know this hindrance, come to know it in all its manifestations. And to do that, you often have to review your meditation practice after you have practiced, to look back and ask yourself, what was going on there? What was not going on there? How did it come about? What was blocking me here? And then slowly but surely, if you keep reviewing and understanding your meditation, then after a while, you will come to understand these hindrances in much, much greater detail than you otherwise would. So that is the first aspect of overcoming the defilements, is to understand them, understand sensual desire, first of all. And the second thing which this mindfulness of the hindrances, if you like, the Satipatthana on the hindrances says, that you should understand the cause for the arising of this hindrance. Why is it that this hindrance arises in the first place? And you can, no doubt, you can understand, you can see why this is so important. It is obviously extremely important if you understand why a particular problem arises, well, then you can do something about it. And you have the tools to actually change what is going on inside your mind and do something about it. And what is it that is the cause for the rising of sensual desire or desires of any sort? It is, of course, that you're seeing the beautiful in something. If you are seeing the beautiful aspect in another person, or you are seeing the beautiful aspect in some object that you want, that you desire, then that seeing the beauty in a particular object is what gives rise to desire for that particular object. And I'm sure most of you can see that straight away intellectually how that works. When you see something beautiful, you desire it. But of course, the point here again is to actually see this happening in your own mind. Seeing it, use your meditation practice when you have become peaceful to see how these things actually work, how there is this dynamic between giving attention to the beautiful of something and then desire arising because of that. Because when you actually see that dynamic, rather than just knowing it intellectually, it suddenly becomes so much more real. And there's a power of seeing it for yourself is just infinitely more than just understanding it intellectually, no matter how much sense it actually makes intellectually. So see this. And then when you have seen how the beautiful, looking at the beautiful in something gives rise to desire, then of course it puts you in a very powerful position. Suddenly you know what you have to do to get rid of desire. You have to not pay attention to that beautiful aspect anymore. By removing your attention from the beautiful aspect of something, desire will tend to cease and disappear. And that is the third aspect of this contemplation, is precisely to understand how the cessation of desire comes about. It comes about from removing, taking away your attention from the beautiful aspect of something. By doing that, desire ceases. And the last aspect here, which is a bit more profound, is to understand how the non-arising of desire comes about in the future. So this is how we should contemplate a thing, a defilement like desire, or sensual desire if you like. And we should understand how it manifests itself in our minds, how it comes about, what brings it into being, so to speak, and how, by removing that cause, you actually take away that defilement. And the more you understand this, the more you see how the dynamic works, the easier it is for you to apply an antidote and to know what to do in your meditation to actually remove that desire afterwards. So it's just a matter of really, the deeper your understanding, the more tools you will have at your disposal to actually do something about it. And so that is for desire. And of course, the same principle goes for ill will. The same principle goes for all the other five hindrances. So for ill will, understand all this manifestation in your mind. Understand the strong, powerful ill will which sometimes arises. But also understand this in its very subtle forms. How a slight irritation, a slight upset is part of this second hindrance known as ill will. And then know how it arises. What is the cause of ill will? And the cause of ill will is always seeing something which is not nice, not beautiful, something which I think is called something which tends to give rise to resistance, something that you resist, something which is not nice, that tends to give rise to ill will. So if you understand exactly this ugliness or this non-beautiful aspect which gives rise to ill will, well then again you have a chance to do something about it. You can actually remove your attention from that ugly aspect, which can otherwise would give rise to ill will for you. And then that's ill will. And the same thing also goes for sloth and torpor, and for restlessness and remorse, and also for doubt. All these five hindrances can be analyzed in the same way. But by far the most important ones are, of course, desire and ill will. So I would recommend put your focus there first. And then you can go on to the more refined ones like sloth and torpor and restlessness and doubt later on. But usually, anyway, that like restlessness and sloth and torpor, the less ill will and the less desire you have, they're not going to be so strong anyway, usually. So by abandoning those two first hindrances, you've already gone a very long way in purifying the mind. So I would recommend to you to try to look into those hindrances, because the more understanding you have of them, the more tools you're going to have to help you to make meditation work. And of course, also the beauty of understanding them is that it will give you also an incentive to practice harder on the virtuous side of things, to actually be more virtuous and to be careful with the mind. Simply because when you understand how it disrupts you and how it takes you away from meditation, and because you would like to meditate well, it will give you an incentive to try to restrain yourself as well in other areas. Okay, so that's all I want to say. So maybe let's do some meditation together here.